I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to create a great culture myself. So I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas I wrote about in the book and to get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. And welcome to another episode of the Culture Makers podcast. I am delighted to be joined on the podcast today by Callum Morrison, who is currently head of people and culture at Medibank here in Australia. People and culture, you know, definitely from reading his background and knowing a little bit about him, are in Callum's blood. And he's got over 15 years experience of helping people to reach their potential, lift engagement and achieve results in that order, I'm sure. And he joins me now. Hello, Callum. How are you?
Hey, Colin. Very well, thank you. Great to be here.
It is in that order, right? It is reaching their potential, lifting engagement, and then results. I got that right. That's the order we would do it, right?
Yeah, it sounds pretty logical to me. Yeah, absolutely.
So 15 years, was it always going to be HR? You know, I had a look on your LinkedIn profile. I got a question once. People are like, how do you know these people so well before you talk to them? I'm like, it's called LinkedIn. I'm not going to lie. So you did a degree university on HR. Was it always going to be a career in people? Did you feel that from an early age?
Well, I wasn't sure, to be honest, Colin. And I think, you know, one of the things you do in retrospect is you kind of reflect on your early experiences and you start to think about, well, how did that shape me as a person and as a professional? And I think that was absolutely the case for me. Growing up, my parents owned small businesses and my first job was working with my dad selling paint in a paint shop. And I learned a lot from him in terms of how you create really great experiences for people and how you create great cultures. Dad's a very generous person by nature, and that for me really translated into how he led his people. And I think he really had this philosophy that if you treat people well, they'll deliver for you. And that really taught me a lot about the environment you need to create for people just to see them thrive and to be at their best. So I think also just having that experience of witnessing them, you know, sort of manage those small businesses, it sort of sparked an interest for me around how businesses operate. And I think I just kind of naturally had that sort of people bent. So I wasn't really clear on what I wanted to do, but you know, if you're not really clear, but you kind of have some broad idea, you go and do a commerce degree. So that's what I did. And I hated it in the first year because I was doing economics and accounting and things that I'd never studied at school. So it just really wasn't in my sweet spot. I wasn't really hitting on my passion. But I really came into my own the second year where I started studying HR, marketing, management units, which was clearly hitting the sweet spot for me in terms of that people bent and around behavior. So how people behave, how they learn, how organizations behave and learn. So I think it really, really sparked an interest from there. So I ended up sort of doing those majors across those dimensions and then carried on and did an honors degree as well in HR. So I think from there, I was pretty much set that this was where I wanted to take my career, and that's where it started.
So a couple of things there. Firstly, for any listeners who are struggling with what to do with their lives, just go and do a commerce degree. Just stop thinking about it. Go do a commerce degree.
It's broad enough. You know, you've got plenty of options. So you know, it feels like if you're not sure, do a commerce degree or do an arts degree. The broadest possible degrees possible, I think.
And any universities listen, if you want to sponsor the podcast with your commerce or arts degree, I'm open to that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I was talking about this actually earlier this week, and I've talked about it in the past, the fact that when we leave school, we're not really ready for the world of business. We've got this view of business based on our parents or our guardians and what the stresses that we see them exposed to and the things that they talk about. We don't really understand the mechanics of business. And so I think that was
certainly for you, working alongside your dad, who was a bit of an entrepreneur, had small businesses, that must have been, I think you mentioned it there, it must have been a really good grounding in kind of some of those dynamics of business. And as you said, you know, you've seen your dad create great cultures as well to get those sales that you needed in the shop.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you're spot on in terms of how you set up coming out of university, going into your professional career. I think there's a massive gap in terms of sort of what you're learning at university versus what's the reality coming into a professional life. So I was really fortunate to have that grounding through being exposed to small business, how it actually operates, and what are the kind of levers you actually need to be mindful of and the things you need to pull in order to get the great results. And what my reflection is, you know, looking back all those years ago is, yeah, the importance of great leadership and the importance of caring for your people and treating them really well so they can thrive and ultimately deliver the results that you need.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's an awesome insight. And we're going to touch more on that. I just got one last question about the paint. So are you like one of those guys now that when you go shopping for paint, you're like, no, that doesn't go with that. This goes with that. Like, is that, do you take control of the paint scenario?
A little bit. What drives my wife nuts is she'll say, I like that color, you know, I like that green. And I'll come in and say, oh, it's actually more teal. And it's just the thing, you know, working in a paint shop and being exposed to, you know, thousands of colours over a few years, it just does her head in. She doesn't understand it. It's just the thing, you know, maybe those that have worked in that sort of industry understand it. But yeah, it's just one of those things that drives her up the wall.
We've all got those things, Callum. So you finished the degree, awesome. And then straight into a job, was it? Did you kind of have a look around and decide what you wanted to do, or you saw a role come up and you thought, yeah, that's going to, you mentioned it was your sweet spot, that plays into my sweet spot and what I want to do.
Yeah, I was really hell-bent on trying to secure a graduate position just to get a little bit more exposure and variety, I guess. So was fortunate enough to secure a role at RACV in Melbourne. So, and I was really attracted to the program because it provided three different rotations where you'd get exposure across different elements of the business. It was no guarantee that I was going to get a rotation in HR. Fortunately, that was my second rotation. So I got a really good feel early on for that. And that really cemented it for me that was the career that I really wanted to pursue, and had a fantastic experience working with, you know, some really talented people and very experienced people that really showed me the way. And that really helped me think about what I was really interested in, but also, you know, the things that I wasn't interested in as well.
Yeah, I've talked on the podcast before about some of those early leadership experiences or the exposure that we get. Was that your experience? Did you have like one or two people that you could immediately look up to, Callum, to sort of say, okay, well, this is the kind of person that I want to become in the context of work?
Absolutely. And I was really fortunate. I had a fantastic leader in my very first rotation. So taught me a lot about, you know, what it means to be a great leader. And there were a couple of those through the early stages of the graduate program that I naturally gravitated towards and could say, you know, this is how you lead and this is how you get the best out of people. But similarly, you know, some not so great experience as well, which just helps shape your own experience as a leader, so you know what good looks like, and you know the things that you need to potentially avoid as well.
So you know working in HR, coming out, you've got the theory, you've got the knowledge, coming into the practicalities, you've got things like, I don't know, personality testing, psychometric testing, you've got people management, you've got performance management, Callum, you've got kind of engagement. So was it a steep learning curve? Did the theory really prepare you for what you faced, or was it a kind of, that's given me the foundation and here's a bunch of new skills I'm going to have to develop and learn on the job?
Very much the foundations, Colin. I was, you know, there was certain situations that stick in my head and I was deer in headlights and thinking that what I thought was reality was absolutely not. So, you know, the theory that I'd learnt through university gave me the grounding and foundation, but how it actually played out in reality was very different. So I had to learn very quickly on the job. And, you know, I think for me, that was just a really strong lesson in, you know, how much you actually do learn on the job. And, you know, I think we can take that for granted sometimes. But you know, I think you've really got to take stock of all the experiences that you have every day, and just you know really think about, well, what have I learnt from what I just experienced or what I actually went through. So that for me really shaped me and taught me a lot about how to approach different situations, but also what I really enjoyed and the things that maybe I didn't enjoy so much.
Because we talk a lot in the learning and development world about the 70-20-10. And the 70 is all about kind of what you learn on the job, right? And for me, that's the invaluable piece. I was talking to a senior manager a couple of weeks ago, and they said, oh, well, you know, where do I find the time in my working week to learn all this other stuff? I was talking about ongoing relevance is something I'm, you know, kind of really keen on, making sure that people develop themselves. I said, that's the stuff you do at the weekend.
Mm.
He was just like, oh, weekend's my downtime. I'm like, I get it. But you also have to use that as, you have to see it as downtime, you know, spending just an hour developing yourself in a particular area such that you can come back with a new piece of knowledge on the Monday, you know. And then with the graduate programs, as you mentioned, is you've got someone to help you, coach you, mentor, to help you embed all of that kind of learning. And so as a graduate, did you have someone there who to help you do that kind of thing? Was there a lot of kind of extracurricular work that you did early on, Callum?
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of key people that really took me under their wing and, you know, just helped me think about what are the things that I need to be thinking about and where do I go to find information that's going to help me sort of fast track my understanding and just help me be a better HR professional ultimately. So it wasn't, you know, sort of any formal mentorship in that sense. But I think, you know, what I reflect on is that in your career, if you look back, you probably see these, you know, a couple of people that pop up every now and then throughout your career. It's almost like a talent sponsor, I sort of refer to it as, that those people kind of really have your back and they want to support you through your career. And they're not always there, but they tend to just pop up at the right time. And I've been really fortunate to have a couple of those people in my corner that just, you know, at various sort of crossroads, different stages in my career, they've just been there and they've been able to provide really great advice and provide a bit of a sounding board that's really helped me along the way.
I love that, talent sponsor. I've never heard that phrase before. I think that's awesome. So you did a couple of years at RACV, and if you're not familiar with that, that's the Royal Automobile Club of Victoria. And then on to state trustees. Were you ready for a step up, Callum?
I think at that stage, having done some specialist HR roles, I was really interested in trying something a little bit in more of a generalist space, and fortunate to have an opportunity at state trustees come up, which I think, you know, if I reflect back, maybe I wasn't 100% ready, but ready to throw myself in. And that was a pretty steep learning curve for me, but I was very well supported in that role. And that's where sort of my passion came from in terms of partnering with different leaders and teams and learning the breadth of, I guess, the HR discipline through those early roles. So really enjoyed the generalist nature. And I think that's what has kept me in those types of roles, because I love the variety. I love working with different teams, understanding, you know, what they're trying to achieve and helping them to achieve that through people.
And generalist roles are pretty tough. You're right in saying there's lots of variety, but it means that you have to be across strategy, culture, transformation, individual learning needs. Is it the variety of the role as well as the work, Callum, that really draws you to that kind of generalist approach?
It is, Colin, absolutely. That just every day is very different and there's a different challenge multiple times of the day sometimes. So, you know, it can be taxing at times, but it always provides a stretch. So, you know, you talk about, you know, when you're feeling slightly uncomfortable is when you're learning. And I find, you know, I'm feeling that quite often in a generalist role, because there's, to your point, there's so much that you need to be across and so many people you need to engage with to help you as well. And that's what I find really, really engaging about the role. And that's sort of what sparks my interest and passion in it.
I just want to ask you about the business part. You mentioned business partner. I guess the term business partner has probably only been the last maybe 5 to 10 years, something along those lines. What does being a really effective HR business partner mean to you, someone with a ton of experience in this space?
Oh, for me, Colin, it's very much being part of the team that you're working with. So, you know, it's sometimes the business partner term gets a little bit of sort of negative press to say, well, if you're a partner, are you part of the team? I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I think you can absolutely be part of the team, and it's really about really understanding the business, and that commercial acumen is a super important skill for a business partner to have, so that you understand how the business operates, what are the drivers there, so that you can then understand what that means from a people perspective and provide, you know, the right guidance and advice to help those teams unlock what they're trying to achieve through people.
Fantastic. And so 8.5 years with State Trustees and ended up in the top job as the HR manager. How did that feel?
It was a fairly quick progression for me, Colin. And again, just being very supported by the organisation to continue to progress. And I think that role has really set me up in some of my more recent roles because I did have the breadth across all of the HR team. So the need to be across all the different disciplines, I think. So a lot of the time, HR business partners, you kind of have to be the jack of all trades and maybe master of a couple. And again, that to the point around variety, that's what I love. I love, you know, dipping into different elements of the specialties, but, you know, bring that through to ultimately consulting with a business and working with them really directly. So I think that role, yeah, I really reflect back on that and feel that really set me up for success.
And so when you think back to that time that you had at State Trustees, Callum, what were some of those cultural challenges? What were some of those things that you kind of really had to work your way through and I suppose learned a lot from then to get you to where you are now?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the big things for us at the time was we needed to, you know, really find a way to change to try and grow the business, because it was at a bit of a crossroads at a point to say that it wasn't performing all that well. And there was recognition that, you know, culture was going to be absolutely critical to drive that turnaround. So what we found is we needed to drive more of a culture of accountability. So we found that, you know, people weren't really clear on expectations. They weren't clear on sort of meaning for their work and the contribution that they would make to customers and ultimately to the success of the business. So the transformation, the turnaround of the business really started with the culture. So, you know, we spent a lot of time on providing clarity for people, on role design, on how we recognized and incentivized performance and how we created meaning for people and link that back to purpose. So that was a massive shift for the business. And, you know, that was one of my really early learnings around culture is the difficulty of trying to change a culture, particularly to that extent, but also the time that it takes. That I think sometimes, you know, there's an element of impatience. So people just say, let's just change this and it needs to be changed right now. But it really takes time. And there's a number of levers that you need to pull at the same time in order for that to embed. So yeah, big learning for me around, you know, what those levers actually are and just the time that you need to take and the tenacity that it requires in order to get it right.
I'm so glad you said that transformation starts with culture, because I still think that's something that's misunderstood. You know, I hear it all the time, transformation programs, you know, literally every company in the world is doing a transformation program, but they think it starts with the rollout of technology. They think it starts with an operating model change. They think it starts with a restructure. They think it starts with a process redesign, when actually it starts with empathy, people understanding the behaviors expected of them. It starts with kind of shifting the way that we work together and collaborate. It starts with making time for creativity, those real micro experiences. And then you can do all of the other stuff, of course, right? But transformation always starts with individuals and how they interact with each other. Is that what you find?
100%. And, you know, the importance of leadership in culture as well. So, you know, again, that was a really key learning for me, that leaders and leadership drives culture. And we need to ensure that the leaders understand what we're trying to achieve and they buy in and they're role modeling the right behaviors, because who do you look to around how to behave and what's expected, you look to your leader. So, you know, if they're not role modeling those behaviors, you're really at an uphill battle. So, you know, just a lot of work with leaders and trying to build leadership capability to really drive that change.
Yeah, it's a great message. One that people on the podcast will have heard before is leaders don't own the culture, but they have to role model what they expect of everybody else to uphold it. So you spent a couple of years at JB Were, and then on to Medibank, where you've been for the last few years. Now I know anecdotally from around the city that Medibank's had a great culture. Callum, I did some work with you guys recently. You know, the energy in the room was fabulous. What are some of those things that you do at Medibank to really maintain that level of engagement that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a really strong cultural core, particularly around diversity and inclusion and health and wellbeing, and also around customer first. So we hold those very dear to us because we know the importance of it. We know the importance in terms of how that allows us to live our purpose, better health for better lives. So there's particularly a couple of things on the health and wellbeing front that I think we do exceptionally well. So I think there's recognition that, you know, health is so important. And I think, you know, our purpose is such that people buy into that, because I don't think there's any argument to say that, you know, health is not important. So we're really fortunate that, you know, that we get that really strong buy-in for our purpose. But from a health and wellbeing perspective, we understand that people need choice around how to manage their health and wellbeing, because everyone's different and everyone has different goals. Everyone's at different stages. So we've been able to develop a really holistic health and wellbeing program. So we talk about your feel good, your way, and that recognizes the importance of choice. So people are able to pick and choose from a really wide range of initiatives to help support their health and wellbeing. And we feel that, you know, that allows them to then thrive and be at their best. So if they're healthy and well, they can bring their best version of themselves to work, and they can deliver great outcomes for our customers and our community. So I think, you know, that holistic approach to health and wellbeing and providing that empowerment and choice for people, I think is really powerful.
And that's just one small part of culture, Callum, right? In terms of health and wellbeing and support you provide to staff, just one small part. You consider everything else within cultures in terms of understanding your role and manager setting expectations and workspace and all of these other things. And yet that's become so important to it. Not that it was never important before, but it's become so much more important because as employees, what we're looking for now is we're looking to an organization's purpose. What do you stand for? Also, how are you going to look after me? And I think we saw that through the pandemic. I think, you know, the organizations that were able to keep hold of their good staff were those that doubled down on purpose and say, this is what we're about. And then that recognized that empathy, vulnerability, all of those previously downplayed softer skills were actually the glue that kept people together. And where we focus on looking after each other and care and, you know, care for each other, then what we're going to get is more emotional capital, which eventually leads to results anyway, right?
Absolutely. And care is something that we really ramped up during the height of the pandemic. And I mean, it's not something new to say that you should check in with your people, right? But it became super important during the pandemic when, you know, people were feeling isolated, particularly in Melbourne, where we have a really high proportion of employees that, you know, during lockdowns, it was very difficult for people and through homeschooling, et cetera. So we really worked with our people leaders to ramp up that element of care and the constant check-in with people and making sure everyone was okay and they had the support that they needed. So, and that, you know, created such a positive response from our people because they did feel really genuinely supported and cared for. And that pays back in spades because they then feel that, you know, they're supported. So they want to deliver really, really well for the organization. So not only is it just the right thing to do, you know, you get really great payback as well as a result.
And are you looking to move towards more of a hybrid working model? I imagine something that Medibank did anyway pre-pandemic is provide flexibility. But are you now looking to widen that in terms of hybrid working options?
Yeah, I mean, I think Medibank was pretty well known in terms of providing great flexibility for people. And I think, you know, a lot of organisations have sort of caught up through COVID. So it's really fast-tracked that for a lot of organisations, which I think is brilliant. We're absolutely focused on thinking about work as in, work is something you do. It's not a place you go. So our view is that, you know, you work where it makes sense based on the type of work that you're doing. So we think about it in terms of the three C's, so connection, collaboration, and concentration. So that should determine where you work. So it ultimately provides some choice for our people.
I have to ask you about engagement. It's something we were talking about just prior to recording. And kind of what's your view on measurement? Every time I do a culture program with an organization, they're saying, oh, how should we measure it? And I give them a whole load. I'm insisting that they measure it. And of course, one of the ways that we do it is through the engagement survey. I still see it as a really important tool to gather feedback from staff. Do you share that opinion, Callum? Do you still see it as a really important tool?
Yeah, I certainly do. In my personal view, and I think it's really powerful just to one ask people in terms of how they're feeling about their experience, but then, you know, the ability to understand that and then action that feedback is super important. So we're kind of moving to this more of an always on kind of listening approach. So, you know, we're not just doing a single engagement survey every year. We'll do them typically every quarter, and they might vary in terms of what we ask. So we might do some pulse surveys that are a bit shorter, that, you know, just help people just to quickly provide some feedback so we can check in on how we're going and that we've got the right actions in place. And then a larger sort of full census survey that we'd explore a wider range of topics. But I think that always on sort of listening approach is really important, so that we're constantly checking in and asking for feedback from our people in terms of how their experience is, and that we can make sure that the actions that we're putting in place are the right ones and they're having the right impact.
Yeah, and it means that you can deal with any issues quickly, Callum. You can celebrate success more quickly. You can action any things that need tweaking. I really like that idea of a more regular pulse check-in by way of measuring culture. So I've got one final question, then I'll let you go and get on with your day. So in terms of you and keeping yourself relevant, and kind of what are those things that, you know, talking to you here now and listening to the things that you've done, I feel like I'm talking to someone who's still seeing themselves as just getting started. You've still got that vitality for people and culture. So what are those things that you're doing to kind of keep yourself relevant or excited about the cultural future ahead of you?
Yeah, a couple of things, Colin. I think I really enjoy listening to podcasts, and I really enjoy it because I get a sense of different perspectives. It builds that sort of outside in thinking, but I can also do it when I'm trying to do some other stuff. Because, you know, we know our lives are pretty busy, and, you know, it's something I can fit in when I'm doing some exercise or I'm doing some odd jobs around the house. You know, I can put the earphones in and just have a listen. So that's what I love about podcasts. I love to, you know, read different blogs as well, just to understand, you know, different tidbits of things that other organisations are doing, just to spark, you know, a bit of conversation or a bit of thought around, you know, how that might apply or why it's been done and what has been the impact. But I think, you know, and going back to the earlier point around on the job, I think the value in my role is that I get to work with a lot of great leaders. So every day I'm exposed to how they're approaching certain situations, and I can learn from that and learn about how they approach it, how they think through it, you know, how they've dealt with a certain situation, and apply that, you know, to my own role and how I lead my people and how I need to respond to certain situations. So I feel like I'm very fortunate to be in that position where I get that sort of exposure.
Awesome. Callum, thank you so much for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast. There's so much that people can take from that. Hopefully you'll enjoy listening to this podcast like you enjoy listening to the others. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good on you, Colin. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Culture Makers podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released. If you've been inspired by today's guest, please share the link with your friends, family, or networks. If you'd like to continue your learning journey, then why not join our virtual community of Culture Makers, where our members share ideas to help them get a little bit better every day. You can find out more at www.culturemakers.community.